listener-supported community radio, KBOO.
Radio in San Francisco. This is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, over 100 national and regional U.S. organizations release a joint statement urging President Biden to end the U.S. role in escalating the dangerous tensions with Russia over the Ukraine. We'll talk to Roots Action co-founder Norman Solomon about that. Also, celebrated troubadour human rights activist and Flashpoints contributor Francisco Herrera, fighting for the children and for the life of Julian Assange. Also, we'll feature an in-depth update on the situation in post-occupation Afghanistan, where families are literally, yes, I'm not making this up, families are literally being forced into selling their children to eat and avoid freezing to death. All this coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We broadcast every weekday from the San Francisco Bay Area over the Pacifica Radio Network. And we are happy to be welcoming along with us from here on in KPFK in Los Angeles. So it's good to have you all with us. And we're going to be coming down there soon and doing some broadcasting from the South. But again, we're delighted to have you along. We begin the broadcast with Francisco Herrera. Francisco Herrera is a revered folk singer, troubadour, human rights activist. He works with the Day Labor Center of San Francisco, and he has put his life on the line many times to tell the story of U.S. Death Squad activities in El Salvador and Guatemala. He has done rescue missions. He has lived through some of the worst U.S.-supported wars. Francisco Herrera, it is good to have you back with us. Welcome.
I'm very happy to be here with you, Dennis, and welcome. Bienvenidos to our sisters and brothers listening to KPFK. Very good. Happy to be joining with you all there as well.
Well, I know, Francisco, that you've been deeply engaged with the incredibly troubling and hurtful U.S. Immigration policies. The suffering has been immense. The suffering, particularly against children, has been especially vicious, and the situation continues. We are and have been reporting nonstop about the brutality against Haitians. Tell us about the children, and then I want to share with our audience a beautiful song you wrote in working with the children. But tell us what's on your mind, Francisco, today as you continue your important human rights work.
Yeah, Dennis, our children are sacred. Needs to become as powerful a statement as Black Lives Matters and all the other wonderful affirmations that our communities have stated in the long history of civil rights and human rights struggles in this country and around the world. No, our children are sacred. You just mentioned the horrific situation of having to sell children to survive or to help them maybe even escape somewhere. But that is a horrendous crime against humanity that is still going on today in the United States, particularly with the situation of the jails where kids have been taken, separated from their families. In fact, we have one situation right now with a Colombian brother who had been applying for political asylum. As you know, in Colombia, after the disarming of the guerrilla units there, there's been over 2,000 murders of formerly organized people. And so here's this one man who was deported, his child and wife were left here, and he's being deported. He's trying to apply for political asylum. We have the story of hundreds of Haitians who've crossed through the Darien jungle in Panama, trying to get to situations of your mom being murdered in front of you, your wife being raped in front of you by the gangs that are running now Haiti. And this continues to happen now due to this Title 42, which we have to get rid of, which Biden promised would get, he would eliminate within the first 100 days. So our efforts to protect...
And let me just jump in there, Francisco, and remind people that Title 42 is essentially a law or an ordinance that allows the U.S. government to essentially ignore claims for asylum, because it's since there's a pandemic, I guess the United States government feels that people don't have the right to apply for asylum, and they should rot in the system and then die of the COVID or whatever. But they've used this Title 42 as a purge, and effectively it ends the ability to apply for asylum. Is that right? Is that correct?
That's correct. And it also gives anyone in charge of the local detention center or punishment center where they're holding people to just kick someone out. Okay, no, you're going to be deported because I feel like it. There's no judge, jury, or anyone that can stop me from doing this. I want to send a great saludo to my sisters and brothers over at Endelon, the National Labor Organizing Network, who've been working tirelessly and precisely on the issue of making Biden keep his word and this whole issue of protecting children and families, and really working towards not just a fair but a real and just immigration policy that recognizes the strength of our families that are coming here. And so that's the whole issue of the children. Yeah, it's the whole issue of the children needs to be really emphasized. Our children are sacred. There's no other truth than that. So we have to step up, and we're doing a lot of us are doing a lot of work, but we have a lot more work to do to get our country to wake up to that fact and work for it, work for that change.
We're speaking with Francisco Herrera, troubadour, human rights activist, really works with the San Francisco Day Labor Company, has worked with saving the lives of people who get caught in the crossfire of U.S.-supported wars for decades. Francisco, let's see if we can play a little bit of, I think we've got a decent cut of your piece, The Children Are Sacred, a beautiful song that you wrote that celebrates the children and reminds us that we must take care of them. Listen to this.
Son sagrados, bellos son, son el regalo más amado, sagrados son, y aquí están cruzando fronteras, y aquí están trayendo la verdad. Dios y nuestra conciencia, pues por la violencia cruzando están. Nuestros niños son sagrados, ellos son, son el regalo más amado. Sagrados son. Here they come, eyes wide open to the violence we have caused. They come bearing gifts for a better tomorrow, healing the sorrow.
esperanza. Our Children Are Sacred by our guest Francisco Herrera, our contributing producer, folklorist, traveling troubadour, human rights activist, speaker for the people. We've been working together a long time, Francisco, but these are very hard times. Another project we've been working on, and I've had the honor to work with you, is trying to save the life of the publisher and journalist Julian Assange, whose work we know at least helped to stop a war in Iraq. And because of that, and because of the way Assange embarrassed the United States government with the truth and the fact that they were conducting a death squad war, the U.S. government appears to be hell-bent on keeping him in jail and letting him die there, letting Julian Assange die there. So there's a major global movement. Assange is really in, he's had a heart attack in recent days. His life is in jeopardy. There's no reason why he should be in jail. And even the lawyers for the New York Times say if they can prosecute Assange and they can do what they're doing to him for the journalism he did, the New York Times is just as vulnerable. So we've taken on this. This is about free speech, isn't it, Francisco?
That's correct, and it's you know, in the grammar schools, they always tell us about Paul Revere, and they always tell us about the role that journalism played in the U.S. Paul Revolution. Revere, yeah. I don't, but the fact of the matter is, Julian Assange has helped so many, has helped save so many lives. You know, with our foundation, Caminante Cultural Foundation, Dennis, we are seeing the war-ravaged land that is now Mexico that nobody really wants to talk about. But these are the issues that Assange journalistic work brought out that has affected all of Latin America, has affected countries throughout the world. And we owe it to Julian to do everything we can to get them, to not just get him out of jail, but really to clean and to raise up his name and the work that he has done that has been thrown through the mud. And even it's amazing to me, Dennis, even when we're putting the song together, wonderful lyrics that you put together, Dennis, and how many people, even within our own progressive community, have been affected by the devastating lies and demonization campaign that has happened against Julian Assange. So it's time that we come together to really help get him out. Go ahead.
And we've seen this, haven't we, Francisco? We've seen this demonization before. We worked very closely with Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the celebrated People's Choice to be the leader of Haiti. Unfortunately, the United States continued its coup policy and undermined the people of Haiti, creating a failed state and devastating suffering.
That's correct.
We've had Assange tell the truth about that. We've been able to report the way in which the U.S. subverted democracy and supported the rich and pumped. It's not that it's not a wealthy country, resource-rich Haiti. It's just that it's been devastated, undermined, and destroyed by U.S. policies. Julian Assange told the truth. He has told the truth about so many stories. And he is resented for it, and it frightens me that so many journalists have turned their back on Assange.
That is a horrific shame, Dennis, that especially knowing that they benefited from all the work that you did.
Yeah, they used his work. Yes,
they put it out there. They promulgated it, and now they run away scared. It's incredible to see what's been going on. Well, you see how they support the military, and it shouldn't be incredible because they're basically sold out to it. But but it's just, it's such a shame to, it's so important for our constituent, for people constituent to be writing to these ABCs and NBCs and all these stations and saying, where are you? You benefited from the work that Julian Assange did. Where are you now?
Really? All right, well, listen, Francisco Herrera, we're out of time for now, but we're going to go out with our song that we wrote together. I worked on the words. You created the music, and it was produced. We had a whole cast of characters all the way from Havana to the United States, and, of course, the wonderful
Greg
producer
Landau.
You are.
Yeah.
Greg Landau, who made it a beautiful work. So this is a celebration. This is a call for freedom. This is an anthem that I wrote with my good brother here, Francisco Herrera, an anthem to free Julian Assange. Listen to this.
As a journalist, I saw that we could achieve a lot of reform with a little bit of work. In some cases, one classified video can possibly stop a war.
A military chopper opens fire. Instruments of genocide. WikiLeaks unmask the lies. By central command, gunsight video nails the murder scene down. Julian told the truth about the war machine. It's getting late in the hour. Don't wait another minute to speak truth to power. Went up in flames, Baghdad on fire. Julian Assange gave that a name. Collateral murder, a family shredded and maimed. Journalists died, who will remember their name?
Julian Assange. Now you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We turn our attention back to the situation in Afghanistan. Yeah, even as the United States is war, saber-rattling, getting ready for another war. Let's do it in Ukraine. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later on with Norman Solomon. The United States destroyed, created misery, destroyed Afghanistan, undermined the possibilities of the people, and left town after 20 years. And it's winter there now, and things are not good. Joining us to talk about the situation in Afghanistan is Dr. Zahir Wahab, And Dr. Wahab was born in Afghanistan, received a BA in sociology from the American University in Beirut. He got his MA in comparative education from Teachers College, Columbia, MA in anthropology, and a PhD in international development education from Stanford University. And he knows the country and he knows what's going on now. Dr. Wahab, it is good to have you back, but these are not good times in your homeland. I think it's important that you just say a little bit about your background and then tell people exactly how bad it is, what kind of mess the occupation left, and how the United States is still using policies, imposing policies that are causing the extraordinary suffering that you're going to tell us about.
Yes. Hi, Dennis. Thank you very much, and thank you for having me back. The story of Afghanistan is an enormous tragedy, and thank you for the kind words about me. And if I can just add a few more things, you know, I was born, raised and schooled in a village in Afghanistan and finished school there, and then was taken on a government scholarship to Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan, where for the first time I saw electricity, paved roads, and small cars, among other things. And then when I finished high school, I was given a scholarship to attend the American University at Beirut. And spent 5 years there, where I traveled fairly extensively, you know, throughout that area, including Palestine and Israel, Syria, of course, Jordan, Cyprus, and then was a Fulbrighter in Egypt later on. And from there, I went to Europe for 2 summers, where I saw the enormous gap in difference between the East and the West, so to speak. And then was given another scholarship and attended, as you pointed out, Columbia University, where I also spent 1 summer traveling, crisscrossing the United States by the Greyhound bus arrangement, and then another scholarship to attend Stanford University. And when I finished that, I took a temporary job at Lewis and Clark College in Portland, Oregon, where I thought I would make a little money because we had nothing back in Afghanistan, and didn't go back. But then, you know, Afghanistan began to unravel and I couldn't go back. So I had been in Portland for decades. And then in 2002, when, you know, the United States, well, in 9/11, 2001, the United States attacked and invaded Afghanistan. And then in 2002, early 2002, the new government, the Karzai government, was formed. And I was asked by the then Minister of Higher Ed if I would help him part-time to, you know, shape or reshape the higher education system in Afghanistan. So I started going back in early 2002, and from 2002 and 2013, I would do my citizenship duty here at Lewis and Clark and then spend a semester in Afghanistan every year, trying to help with higher education, advising, teaching, directing, you know, and so forth. And then from 2013 until October 2019, I was asked to teach and direct master's degree programs full-time at the American University of Afghanistan, which of course has been dissolved and doesn't really exist in reality. And now I'm back in Portland. So that's my story. But, you know, I think we should focus on the plight, the catastrophe, the disaster under which the 35 million Afghans currently exist. And as you know, Afghanistan was the poorest and least developed country in South Asia to begin with. And then the United States invasion and occupation for the last 20 years further underdeveloped it while pumping a lot of money into Afghanistan, about $140 billion given to the Afghan regimes or puppet regimes, and of course most of that money left the country and were the former ruling mafia and now enjoy luxurious lives in places like Sweden, Switzerland, the United States, New Zealand, UAE and other places, while the vast majority of people are suffering. And I think a good place to start, Dennis, would be what Shelley Thakral, I think the communication director of the World Food Program, said yesterday in Kabul, and from Kabul, saying that the vast majority of the Afghan right now are hungry or food insecure, and 10 million are really hungry, and about 10 million are marching toward starvation. And she said the World Food Program would need at least $2.6 billion to get people through the winter. Right now, as you know, it's very cold there, and the country is blanketed with snow, and the pandemic is raging. The country was, in a drought for the three consecutive years. And then on top of all that, of course, the U.S. imposed sanctions, where on August 15, the United States declared complete sanctions, meaning there was no money going into Afghanistan from the United States, the UN, the World Bank, the IMF. And on top of that, of course, the United States froze the $10 billion Afghanistan's money that is being stored in this country. So add all of these, and the vast majority of the people are right now suffering to the extent that people are selling whatever they can, their household furnitures, to stay either warm or find some kind of staple food. People are selling their kidneys and body organs. They're even selling their little children, and not just girls, but boys too. So it's more than a disaster. It's a catastrophe, I think, that we're seeing, on television, but also we get communication daily from friends and associates telling us how terrible the conditions are and how desperate the situation is.
We're speaking with Dr. Zahir Wahab. He is of and from Afghanistan. We're talking about the situation on the ground there. It's hard to hear some of these details, but I know it's a lot harder to live them. You said that people are selling their organs. I know these are horrible things for you to learn about. And their children?
Yes.
How do we know this?
From anecdotes, my wife and I, of course, are on the phone more than once or twice a day. Either people call us from Kabul, Afghanistan, or we call somebody to see how things are going. And I see pictures, every day, the first thing I do in the morning, Dennis, is to sort of review the Afghan press. And I speak both Farsi and Pashto, so I can read the local press or listen to the news and watch it. So we know for a fact, that this has been going on. Of course, even before August 15th and the sanctions, body organs, in particular kidneys, were a hot market. And little girls, which means, of course, these girls are not, imagine just selling your child to save the other children or your family, and what this means for the women's future. And on the other hand, we have this so-called conference by the European Union today and tomorrow in Brussels called for the Afghan women, where celebrities like Angeline and a couple of Afghan women, which were part of the ruling elite, these people are talking about the plight of the Afghan women, while in fact the policies of the United States and its allies and international organizations all negate the concern on the part of the international community, the so-called concern regarding Afghan women or Afghan men, because it is the U.S. imposed policies and its allies' cooperation and the international organizations that have caused the scarcity right now. You know, there's very little cash in Afghanistan. Most people have lost their jobs. There's no income. There are no jobs. There's no work. There's no cash. There's no purchasing power. So the economy has nosedived completely, you know, because people have no money to buy with. And also there's very little stuff in the market because there are no dollars in Afghanistan to pay for the imports, whether it's gas or potatoes or wheat or whatever they are. So it's, you know, it really has to do with the U.S. imposed sanctions, not to even talk about the unjust and criminal war and occupation.
The U.S. imposed sanctions. People should understand how much, while they were occupying your country, how much a day were they spending?
Well, to occupy Afghanistan, I think $300 million. You know, the United States, as we all know, spent about more than $1 trillion on the war, and then it quote gave $140 billion to the Afghan regime between 2002 and 2021, August 20 and August 15th. But most of that money, as I said, left in the form of contracts, you know, by U.S. contractors or third country contractors, but also due to corruption. As we all know, Transparency International, again, ranked Afghanistan's previous regime as the most corrupt in the world, along with, you know, a few other notable countries. So really, it's the sanctions that are killing, because again, you know, last week, even I could not send a small amount of money to a few friends who could buy some food for themselves because the U.S. government was not allowing it. And now I understand, I think they have lifted those sanctions on private contributions. So this is the situation. You know, a complete sort of embargo and isolation of the country, especially economically and politically.
You know, Professor, we heard a lot from sort of feminists in the United States who were very, very concerned about brutal treatment by the Taliban of women, and that they had gone a long way to bring sort of women's liberation on the ground to Afghanistan. What's your take on that now? Were their fears justified in terms of the Taliban?
To an extent. I mean, you know, these people fought for 20 years and then they took over, you know, on August 15th, or were asked to take over because the other government escaped, you know, in the afternoon of August 15th. And the Taliban, this observation is that this current leadership is different from the one in 1991 to 96. You know, they promised all kinds of asylums, you know, freedoms, and so forth. But in fact, you know, as I said, most schools are closed right now, although they're supposed to open schools tomorrow in universities. Most girls, women only in education and also in the health area are allowed to work. Other women have been asked to stay home for now, so they're not working. And in fact, before the Taliban, about a fifth of the civil servants were women. So in terms of mobility, travel, working, earning, going alone places, going to schools and universities, these are fairly restricted by the women, by the Taliban, you know, for women. But the same is true in some ways for men. You know, most men are afraid to leave their homes. There's hardly any work being done. There's no governance in a sense. So right now, you know, the Islamic Emirates, as they call themselves, are preoccupied with staying in power and trying to bring some kind of safety and security, although I'm told that safety and security have been the best in the last 20 years. But in terms of economy, most people are suffering, and women are even more so, because as we know, this is a country where most women, you know, and has the largest proportion of widows and girls, you know, and child marriages and women's illiteracy. So women suffered even before the Taliban, and they, of course, are suffering even more now because of the economic situation. So it's a very bad situation for everybody. But, you know, the thing now to do is really, instead of paying lip service to women's liberation and this and that, I think people need to persuade the United States, the World Bank, the IMF, the USAID, you know, the U.S. allies, to lift the sanctions entirely and pump liquidity, money into Afghanistan so that people can have money to buy food and fuel to stay warm and stay fed. This is what we need to do. I don't think we need to give speeches or have conferences or webinars on women or this and that. We just need to open the country and engage the Taliban, you know, and let them take the money, you know, conditionally, so that the world can place conditions and should place conditions on Taliban, quid pro quo, you know. You do these things and we will release this much money. Then you do this and we will release more money. This is what we need to do. Otherwise, millions of people are going to be starving and the whole world would be sorry.
It really does feel like the United States has decided to punish, after a 20-year punishing occupation, that the United States, resentful of being purged from its occupation, I don't know how long they expected to stay there, I think there's rage and anger, and the United States is punishing the people. Wouldn't you say that this is about retaliation?
Yes, I mean, I think the United States, I would have to say, was not only diplomatically fooled by the Taliban and also the previous government, which, you know, lied to the United States until the very last minute when they left for Tashkent, Uzbekistan. So the U.S. has been lied to before by the previous mafia government, but also by the new Taliban, but also clearly, you know, the United States realized in February 2021 with Trump, you know, that it was losing the war. So the U.S. lost the war, it was defeated, you know, and had to leave or was kicked out. So, and I don't think the United States is going to forget that, in particular, the military, industrial, and congressional complex. The U.S. is not going to forget this, and I think they're going to try to get even, or at least, you know, impose as much suffering and pain on the country as possible. The point is that the Taliban don't look like they're malnourished. You know, they obviously live fairly well, but it's the vast majority of the Afghans who are suffering in the form of collective punishment. This is what's being done. The wrong people are being punished. And the U.S. hypocrisy is clearly being sort of demonstrated, you know, very openly throughout the world. I mean, what happened to morality, to compassion, you know, to humanity? All this talk about human rights, you know, and humanitarian assistance, etc. This is just talk. It's for television, for propaganda, and for self-congratulation, when a country is slowly being sort of, you know, dying or suffering.
Wow. Well, we're going to leave it right there, but just for now, we appreciate you coming and having this ongoing dialogue with us, Dr. Zia Wahab. It's always instructive, and our listenership appreciates it. Thank you. Stay safe.
Thank you, Dennis.
Please. Please stay safe. Come back.
Thank you for the whole thing. Take care.
Yes. Take care now. And you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. All right, from the last war to the next war, you've got U.S. cheerleaders for war in Ukraine. It's a very troubling moment, but there are over 100 national and regional organizations that don't want the United States to get involved in another war. That's what we're going to talk about next. Stay with us. Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and we are welcoming this week the brothers and sisters at our sister station in Los Angeles, KPFK. Welcome. This is the Flashpoint Show. Again, my name is Dennis Bernstein, and it's an honor to be with you in Los Angeles now as well, and along with the rest of the country. We're also honored to be joined again by Norman Solomon. He is a longtime media critic, wonderful writer. He has written a number of important books, and he is a co-founder of a really important activist organization called Roots Action. Roots Action is not crazy about the fact that there's a lot of saber rattling that could lead the United States into a very dangerous war that could have nuclear triggers that could go along with it. Norman Solomon, am I overstating the case? Are you concerned? Are all these organizations concerned that this is a very dangerous moment in history?
Dennis, if anything, you're understating the gravity of the situation to kick this discussion off. Russia and the United States between them, more than 90% of the nuclear weapons in the country. They are pointed at each other, which is to say they're pointed at all of us. And we know that politically silence is consent. And everybody listening to us in California and elsewhere in the country, you have a choice. You can be silent and inert, you can be inactive, or you can help prevent the destruction of everyone you love and everyone you don't know who you love anyway. And this is what's at stake right now. It's not hyperbolic, Dennis, when we look at the nuclear weapons rattling as well as the saber rattling of what's going on right now.
Well, and it is a fact, I believe you wrote about this with Dan Ellsberg in The Nation, that when we have these kinds of encounters with Russia at this point, things get a lot more dangerous because things seem to go on, weapons are put on a more hair trigger structure that makes it more easily triggered, more easily able to trigger a nuclear war?
Yes, the U.S. and Russia have intercontinental ballistic missiles that, because they are land-based, they are on launch-on-warning status. And the U.S. news media rarely, if ever, allude to the fact that when there's an on-the-ground confrontation and the very real possibility of so-called conventional conflict between the two nuclear superpowers, it heightens the risk that one side or another will decide, hey, I need to do a preemptive strike because they are the only part of the triad, that is, the ICBMs are the only part of the triad that's vulnerable. The submarine base, the air base, they're not vulnerable. But this is a nuclear war waiting to happen, and that's why, as you mentioned, Daniel Ellsberg and I wrote a piece in The Nation magazine in November, and there's more and more activism to shut down the 400 ICBMs that are in five states right now in silos in the United States. Now, what might have seemed abstract to people a few weeks ago is very real. And I think the most important message to people is to get active. You, wherever you live in the United States, have a representative in the House. You have two senators. They need to hear from you. the demonstrations coming up around the country on February 5th, very important in the streets to show demonstrable, clear opposition to what is escalation on the part of our government, quote unquote, the Biden administration. At the same time, everybody in Congress is elected from somewhere. And if you and I don't contact our members of Congress, the senators and the House member, then we are leaving the field clear to, frankly, the warmongers. And there are plenty of them on cable news. As a matter of fact, my colleague Jeff Cohen, who co-founded Roots Action and founded the Media Watch Group FAIR, he's been watching the Hardy Soul, been watching all the major cable news networks in the last week, day in and day out, the poor guy. And he has said that this is worse than in the lead up to the Iraq war. There is almost no dissenting voice whatsoever right now. It is Orwellian. It's, you know, in the worst days of Pravda in the 1980s. It is being replicated now in U.S. news media. The message is basically America good, Russia bad. The U.S. needs to stand firm. And you know what I think of as an analogy? It's like two people standing in a pool of gasoline lighting matches. And our president, Biden, is saying, oh, I don't want to back down. I want to keep lighting these matches.
Yeah. We're speaking with Norman Solomon. He's co-founder of Roots Action. Roots Action, along with more than 100 other national, regional U.S. organizations, have released a statement on Tuesday urging President Biden, quote, to end the U.S. role in escalating the extremely dangerous tensions with Russia over Ukraine. Now, we got the two-gun, don't back down, U.S. corporate press that sort of seems to be like a little bit to the right of Biden. They're certainly not discouraging war, and there does seem to be a support for an encounter. They're saying, how could we let the Russians get away with this? They amass, they're amassing on the borders of Ukraine. It's aggressive. If they go there, where will they go next? Norman, what's wrong with that argument?
Well, it's the laptop argument. It's the laptop warriors. It's the studio brave people in their studio chairs under the hot lights. And we've seen this before, all the way back to the Vietnam War. We heard, you can't back down. They're bad guys. The communists are terrible. Now, instead of you can't be soft on the communists, it's you can't be soft on the Kremlin. And it boils down to, are we going to have a warfare state? Are we going to push the envelope or not? I'm sure, Dennis, that some people listening are saying, you know, Putin is a really bad guy. You have to stand up to him. Well, you know, people could have said that about Ho Chi Minh and did. People said that about Saddam Hussein and did. I know that in 1967, someone who represented a much more repressive government, Alexei Kosygin, the Soviet leader, met with Lyndon Johnson in Glassboro, New Jersey, and they talked about the need to cool down tensions and confrontation because of the threat of nuclear war. Now, here we are in 2022. That threat is much greater. Anybody who doubts it, just look at the bullet in the atomic scientist doomsday clock, which has moved in the last 10 years closer and closer to the apocalyptic midnight. So it's past time for us to get real about this. Imagine if the Warsaw Pact, the Soviet-led pact, or a Russian military pact had been arming their allied governments in Mexico or Canada. Can you imagine what would have come out of Washington insisting that it's absolutely intolerable? And yet we're supposed to believe that the United States is pure as the driven snow, and the Kremlin is populated by devils, and we have to stand firm. That is the insanity of what Martin Luther King called the madness of militarism.
Is there any, what is your thinking on how to transform a situation like this at this point? What do politicians need to do? How should the press be covering this? What are we getting the proper perspective in terms of the way it's being portrayed for U.S. folks? How do we straighten this out, Norman? What are your thoughts on that?
we almost never get from the mainstream media basic history, which is documented if you go to the National Security Archive documents released a few years ago, showing that then Secretary of State James Baker in 1990 promised the leaders of then the Soviet Union not one inch eastward. That was the phrase. Not one inch to the east would NATO move. They've doubled up since then 12 different countries to make them part of NATO, now on the Russian border, and now there is a threat in the air, and Biden says it's a prerogative for NATO to be joined by Ukraine, right on the border where all these weapons are already being shipped. So, I mean, part of it is the task of organizers, of activists, of independent media to educate the public, to agitate against the warfare state, and to get constituents involved. Because I have to say, Dennis, in my years, many years really of activism at this point, I've never seen a bigger gap between public opinion and what's being spewed out by the mainstream media and people in Congress and the White House. If you look at polls, like Data for Progress did a poll a few days ago, similar to other results, most people in the United States are telling pollsters that they want the United States to compromise with Russia over the Ukraine issues. And yet what we're getting from the Biden administration and the hawks, and they dominate Congress, Republicans and Democrats, they're saying no compromise, we have to stand firm. Well, that will make us very happy in the moments before the mushroom cloud. It's really insanity.
You know, Norman, I hate to say this, but even the progressives within the Congress have been relatively quiet. Can you explain that?
A lot of fear, a lot of frightened people in Congress. It reminds me of 1964 and 65. Only 2 out of 100 senators voted against the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. Wayne Morse, one of the two of them, said he would give a speech on the floor, and then he would go back to the cloakroom in the Senate, and his colleagues would say, Wayne, great speech. And he would say, why won't you say anything like that? Well, they're afraid. They're afraid of the media. Now it's, you know, you're soft on communism. No, soft on Putin. And a lot of progressives have swallowed this hook, line, and sinker, including in Congress. They were afraid of being targeted by the mass media and the political militarism forces, which are profuse in this country. And it's almost every member of the Progressive Caucus. And the best they can do, and Barbara Lee was one of the two, along with Pramila Jayapal, they said, we support diplomacy and we have significant concerns about deployment of the troops. If your house is on fire, do you have, quote, significant concerns? If your house was on fire, do you think you might raise your voice? So by understating, even the best members of Congress so far are really aiding and abetting this terrible, dangerous escalation. And that's why it has to come from the grassroots. We have to light the fire under members of Congress if they're going to move.
All right. Norman, there's going to be a formal release of the statement tomorrow. Tell us about how that's going to happen and some of the organizations that are participating with Roots Action.
Well, we have a news conference tomorrow. People can find out more about it if you go to rootsaction.org under our news and views on the homepage. We have released the text. There was a good article on Common Dreams today of this statement. And really, this is now about activism. More than 100 organizations speaking out now, really for the first time in unison. And I encourage everybody who wants to get involved, get on our action alert list. It's rootsaction.org, and let's work together.
All right, Norman Solomon, Roots Action, really important work. We thank you for taking the time out to be with us on Flashpoints today.
Thank you, Dennis.
All right, you're welcome. Stay safe. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a musical break. Let's call this a surprise miscellany that I'm requesting from our trusted engineer. Give us some beautiful music, and then when we come back, I've got some program notes. Stay with us. Thank you. to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein, and all you folks in SoCal and LA, we are happy to be with you. We are the Flashpoint Show. We have been broadcasting from the Bay Area for 30 years, more than 30 years. I did 5 years before that in New York City on WBAI, where we broke key aspects of the Iran-Contra scandal on a program called, first called Contragate, then called Undercurrents. And we played a key role with Bob Perry and Gary Webb in showing the way in which the United States government collaborated with the various drug traffickers of this hemisphere to do illegal covert actions that the Congress would not fund, the Congress of the United States. And so we were there reporting on our show called, as we said, it was Contragate, then Undercurrents, and went from there to San Francisco, and we're here in L.A. now. And I'm very interested to know, what are the stories you're interested in here? If you're listening from Southern California, from Los Angeles, what are the kind of stories, what are the issues that move you? I'm wondering what you're thinking about, how you are dealing with the COVID. Are you getting ready to escape the monster? We want to hear from you. You can hit me up at dennis@kpfa.org. dennis@kpfa.org. We'd love to hear from you. Tell me what you think, what you're doing. And yeah, I used to spend a lot of time down here. We used to do a lot of broadcasting over KPFK, and we are happy to bring the Flashpoints program back to you. So stay tuned. That's it for us for now, but there will be more tomorrow.
Wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. Special thanks to producer and engineer Rod Akil. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
Listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO, Portland.
Welcome to Bookwaves. I'm Richard Walensky. In mid-January 2022, the McMinn County School Board in Tennessee removed Art Spiegelman's Pulitzer Prize-winning graphic novel Mouse about the Holocaust from the county classrooms, claiming that the book used obscene language, mostly dams, and nudity, a nude mouse. This was announced the day before Holocaust Remembrance Day. In late November 2000, my former co-host Richard A. Lupoff interviewed Art Spiegelman while he was on tour for the book Little Lit. I was most likely in New York for Thanksgiving.